HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast. The weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hey guys, how's it going? Since August 2018, when floods destroyed about 270 and then some looms in the North Paruva belt of Kerala, mainly in the weaving town of Chendamangalam, life changed completely for the weavers there. That's when journalist, fashion veteran and industry mentor Ramesh Menon went back to his home state to document the effects of the flood. And he was so affected by what he saw that he set up a crafts revival organization called Save the Loom. Join fashion journalist and expert Bharat Gupta as he chats with Mr. Ramesh Menon about regional looms that are almost lost and their revival and setting up Save the Loom, among other things.
The last couple of years have been very hard on Kerala. First the floods and then the pandemic. But in this tough time, fashion veteran and industry mentor Ramesh Menon came in as what can rightly be termed as the hand of God. He has set up a revival organization for close to 300 looms called Save the Loom, which not only has revived but also carved a future for the weavers in God's own country. Welcome to the HD Brunch podcast and congratulations on your feature.
Thank you so much, Bharat, for that wonderful introduction. We are absolutely thrilled by the feature in Hindustan Times Brunch. It also takes our voice, the work that we have done over the past 3 years, to a larger national audience. And I feel it's a good story, not just from Save the Loom's point of view, but what we actually represent on the ground.
Right. So, you know, the world changed on 24th August 2018, and in turn you changed the world for a lot of local weavers. Do tell our listeners as to what happened and what was the condition like when you reached.
Yeah, so I went to that place more to see what was the impact, because I just got some filtering news that there's this cloud cluster closer to Cochin, which is about 20-25 kilometers away, which got impacted by the floods, and this entire belt of Ernakulam district was completely devastated in the floods that lasted for about 5 to 6 days, beginning the 14th, 15th of August, and it lasted till the 19th, 20th of August. The morning of 24th is when I went there just to see what was the impact. And to my utter shock and disbelief, what I saw was completely devastating. It is not just the looms or the workspaces that got destroyed, but also the homes of the weavers. That particular belt had almost 75,000 homes destroyed. And so that was something which can never leave my mind, what I saw, home after home, loom after loom, everything lying destroyed, probably people's looms and the parts were like few hundred meters away from their homes because the water had washed away everything. So the first reaction was for me to document what happened. I had an impending meeting with the government of Kerala towards the month end regarding something which I had put them a proposal almost 8 months back. So all I wanted was to take to the government and say this is what the ground reality was, and not knowing what to do. That following 10 days of my documentation, meeting the government, coming back to the craft cluster, I realized that there is a chance of hope that we can build on, because everybody had given up. There was no ray of hope. And the weaving community, Kerala is largely divided into cooperative societies for weavers. So they are very pretty much organized. So this particular belt had about 5 weaving societies. And adjacent to that, there were another 2 of them. So 7 of these were very badly affected. They had nothing remaining in their weaving societies. They lost the stock which was ready for Onam. Onam was on 25th August and the floods happened 10 days prior to it. And that's the biggest season for any weaver. So they not only had damage to the ready stock, the yarn got destroyed, the looms got destroyed, the accessories got destroyed, and they didn't even have the homes where they could even, you know, most of them had no clothes when they came back home. And all their life, they've been just weaving. We had to pick up somewhere, and there are certain incidents which happened, which also the Brunch feature writes about, is how I got the momentum to start Save the Loom.
So as per the statistics that you shared and the research that you did in the first 10 days while you were there, you also mentioned that 96% of the weavers were women. While on one hand, it does please us to know that women are so actively employed in Kerala, it also sort of disheartens us that their livelihood got taken away. How do you think that the looms empower the villages and in turn empower women in Kerala?
See, craft is very community-based. When I say women have taken over the craft, the numbers that I quoted you from Kerala, but largely if you take across most craft belts, women have now taken over the baton from the men over the years and decades now, because these professions are not highly paying. An average worker, a skilled or unskilled worker in Kerala, whether a plumber, carpenter, or any of those that you mentioned, who are far less skilled than what a weaver is, make about 800 to 1200 rupees per day. Whereas a weaver makes just about 150 to 200. For the laborious work, and very interestingly, if I can put this fact out to you, weaving is one of the rarest profession where your multiple senses, multiple processes are involved at the same time. The hand moves, the feet moves in a rhythm. The eye has to look at every single yarn. And the mind has to look of a design. There is no computer-generated design in your head. So you're just thinking of these things, and laboriously when you work for 8 to 10 hours, what you're getting is pittance in comparative to what they should have been rightfully getting. We don't treat them as an artist. They are generationally skilled. They haven't been to any fashion institutes or technology institutes to learn what they're doing. And these are the last set of weavers. We can't be emotional over the fact that there is no next generation which can claim my forefathers were doing this practice. So in that kind of a context, women taking over is also a positive sign of what we see on ground. And our entire effort is to look at how do we take this to the coming generation? What is that will ensure that the coming generation comes back to craft or to practice it?
And then we talk about women supporting women. Now with the Vidhi collection that was launched by Save the Loom, the women weavers, and through the loom, they created a collection for the lawyers. How did this come about? And, you know, when I see the visuals, when I see the pictures, it's almost like it's been designed by professional fashion designers. How did this collection come about and how has the response been to it?
Very interestingly, my journey was quite inspired by Kerala's first women judge ever, K.K. Usha, who we just lost a couple of months back at the age of 81. So she was a very dynamic woman who kind of guided me or gave me that support when I started. The first check which came and which inspired me to start the crowdfunding was from her and her husband, who's a former judge of the Bombay High Court. So that was one reason. Communications with them also kind of gave me a far too many insights into how a whole lot of judges were inclined towards handlooms in the past. So that was just a thread which began. And we also wanted to explore spaces where handloom is used or can be used in a far more regular way than limited to occasions and weddings and festivals. That's what Kerala textiles in Kerala has been reduced to. And that's the same story elsewhere too. Unless we take handmade and put them in a pedestal of luxury, there is very little future. Unless we take them and make it part of a larger lifestyle than wearing it for four times a year, it has no future. So we need to make it contemporary. We need to start making appealing. And in that context, it's a small window was open to us saying, okay, so the women lawyers are governed by a dress code. A whole lot of senior women lawyers had very articulate dressing sense. And they've constantly spoken about that in media of how important it is for a woman lawyer to dress in the courts. And unfortunately, today's youngsters want ease, comfort, and a whole lot of factors. So they moved away from saris. So that was the starting point for us. We do have an in-house design team and we wanted to explore that space. And we went about researching, we went about talking to lawyers across the country and came up with this idea that here is a window. If we can convert a textile to be far richer in terms of not the design element, where there's a limitation with black, white and grays, but also to make the textile far more luxurious in comfort, where a where a woman lawyer has 12, 14 hours of work. And what does she need to wear, which does not make her feel that she's wearing a uniform? And it can fit into a lifestyle. So if at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, she gets out from her office, she wants to go to a dinner, she does not have to think home to go change. When she takes off a gown, there could be some element of a sari, which can make her look absolutely stylish and in sync. And these colors, black, white, and gray, was fabulous for us to experiment.
It sounds beautiful and it looked beautiful. And more power to all the weavers who worked towards this collection. You know, very interesting, you mentioned that to have relevance and reach, it needs to enter the luxury space. Now, to marry sustainability with luxury, we have a lot of couture designers in our country who are flourishing, who have a global presence today. How supportive has this group of designers been towards sort of sourcing fabric and sourcing handloom fabric from you for their collections? Have there been any associations with couture designers who are known globally from India?
Oh, for sure. I mean, my entire journey of inspiration began with a young boy who came to Lakme Fashion Week in 2006. And he's one of the most feted designers from this country in the last 15 years, is Rahul Mishra. His first collection was from Kerala, my home state. And he showed me a window of what Kerala's simple textiles could mean to the world of fashion. You know, there is no embroidery. There is no surface treatment. It's a simple off-white fabric with what we call the kasavu in Kerala, is the gold zari on it. That's about it. Or colored border. How a simple textile can enrich and be still stylish or luxury, something which he threw a window upon. And for the last 14, 15 years, we have seen his journey in the fashion industry. Coming to the point of designers and couturiers helping us as a part of our process, yes, when the floods happened, my first call of action was to reach out to all my friends in the industry. Being part of the fashion world in the front end with the fashion weeks, all of them are friends. So I could very easily reach out to them and appeal that what is that they can do on a long term. Is there a source and mechanism by which I can, you know, look up to them to bring in some kind of continued support. Designers by default work season to season, so they move from craft to craft. But very interestingly, I should mention this project that we did during the Kochi Biennale, wherein Himanshu Shani of 11&11, who's one of the finest handloom designers and handloom developers in the country, and works with also with Khadi in a very, very big way, took a fabulous initiative. He came to Kerala. He went across with us to all the Khadi clusters which got destroyed. And within a week of him going back to Delhi, he just called me and said, Ramesh, let's do this. Send me your simple men's dhoti and the gamcha fabric in sets of 14, 15 meters each in packets of 5 or 7 so that let me speak to designers and I'll send this all to all of them. And let's have a collection ready. Biennale is coming and let's put this up. And I had Rajesh Pratap, David Abraham, Anita Arora, Gaurav Jay Gupta, and a whole lot of other 20, almost 15 to 20 designers. And it just kept growing as during the Biennale. They did some amazing work with a Kora Khadi of Kerala, which was universal to everybody. The same meterage and the same textile went to 14 designers. But what they sent me back was a garments which was so spellbounding that we had the most fascinating customers, as if I can call that word as fascinating, because we had the head curator of MoMA onwards to the head of Grand Palais in Paris to the finest craft connoisseurs and fashion connoisseurs and art connoisseurs consuming these textiles, and which was a huge eye-opener that the simplicity of textile also can be reaching luxury. It also can mean couture because it's hand-spun, hand-done, hand-woven, hand-treated, hand-finished. And I don't think there is any more luxury definition that can fit into it for a simple textile, you know, that comes without any of those definitions for what couture means.
And that's the beauty of it, you know. It's just that little initiative and push that you need, and the right direction can really bring our weavers, artisans, and craftsmen to the forefront, because the sort of work that they do is traditional yet has an international appeal. You know, it has this deep-rooted sense of Indianness, which I think everyone still appreciates, and it will always have a market for. In the hour of need, when the floods happened, was Instagram and social media a medium for you to reach out to people in terms of crowdfunding and getting the voice out there and to be heard and for people to find that right support and direction? And if so, how did it work so seamlessly for you?
When I started the website and the campaign went, I was still cynical of people giving money to an organization they've not heard of. So my website was practically an experiment where we did not have a about us section that who are we. We did not have any kind of information kind of saying put this kind of fund. We just had a query. I want to save a loom. You cut into the website, read what has happened, see what has happened, and just send in this questionnaire as to, yes, I am interested to do it. And then we communicate back. Mind you, within that first 3 days of my starting the website, it just crashed because unbelievably, I got mails, emails, not just from Keralites, not from Indians, not from fashion community, but from people who are not even connected to this country, from Botswana to Ohio to, you know, to Australia. We had some crazy emails that, you know, dropped into our email boxes. And it was just an eye-opener that, yes, there is a hope, there is humanity, there is concern for craft or human skill, even from people who are not so directly connected to it. And that was a huge hope. And mind you, we did not have to even take a penny from the internet. Though we use social media to create awareness, the money, because of people's generosity, it just came into the craft clusters by on its own. Even we did not have to raise and put a bank account in place. We had few film actors. We had social organizations like the Rotary. We had corporates like Bajaj. So we had a whole lot of people from within the surroundings who could reach out and put the funds out. And we had a whole lot of assurances that in case we want to raise the funds through internet, there was support given to us. I had a couple who flew down from Manhattan in December 18, just to volunteer for 15 days because they read our story. I didn't know them from anyone, anywhere. They had no connection to India. This was the first visit. They just read my story on the internet somewhere. The next thing she writes to me from Manhattan is, I'm a home tutor and I do home weaving in Manhattan. And I would like to come and volunteer because you're doing something for the weavers and it means a lot to us. And on January 2nd, 2019, they were at my doorstep in Cochin after taking almost 18 hours of flight saying, we are here to volunteer. So these are the stories that we carry forward of humanity, of concern, of how craft is not just for us or for our, you know, what it means to India, but it's universal when a craft community of 700 weavers are affected by any natural calamity and they're threatening to be wiped out. I am quite positive today that there is a global concern for it. And we are the greatest examples of what we could do.
A large part of people mm-hmm. who are on social media are what we refer to as the millennials or Gen Z. Now, you know, handloom, khadi, all of these are terms where visually we love them. They're very traditionally rooted. But how do you believe that we can involve our future generation? How do you think that we can appeal to them that they do away with the fast fashion and move into a more sustainable space of fashion and invest their time, energy, and money into something that is a quality product and supports our local artisans, weavers, and craftsmen in Kerala and across the country?
It's a very interesting question. When you look at it, talking about today's generation, how do we appeal to them? We are very fortunate the times that we're living, it's that we have a connectivity with people through social media and internet. Translating the stories from the back end of our business to the front end people is not as difficult as what it could have been in any other time. In our own research and our own insights that we get from the social media, the people that we kind of speak to constantly is in the age group of 19 to 35, you know, and that I believe is the future that one can speak to constantly and learn from as well, you know, in terms of what they're looking for when they have an alternative to the fast fashion brands, as to what kind of alternatives can we provide and can craft come to that space to appeal to them. It is possible, but also that we need to keep in mind is handmade is always going to be limited. And increasingly, we are going to have limited people practicing hand. Unless those numbers goes up, there is no way other way to scale up the whole production system. But the aspirational of handmade and the luxury that it provides is unparalleled in terms of what it is. Most of our communication that is being carried forward, most of the team that we are working with, all our 20-year-olds who have come out of fashion schools and colleges, who are working on these designs, and we are taking them back very happily back to the craft clusters and making them work at the grassroots. And the experience I can tell you is that they are coming out with solutions. They are coming up with amazing product lines, which speaks to their generation, not to the older ones. When we did the Vidhi collection, we didn't speak to a 50-year-old woman lawyer. our attention and the design ideology was appealing to a 30-year-old or a 25-year-old or a 21-year-old. In fact, the amount of social media, Instagram DMs that we got for Vidhi was that it's our convocation and can we wear for it, right? The only point, what comes in handmade is how do you make it affordable? How do you crunch the numbers? And that's a challenging task that we are constantly fighting for, that how can you make something which is coming out of a handloom or a hand process, how do you create a sustainable system, not just in terms of a product, but in terms of livelihood? A product that we produce out of our looms changes almost 16 hands.
Oh, wow.
And each of those 16 hands, which takes away or keeps the work away from machines, need to be rightly paid. They need to make the livelihood out of that. And that remains a constant challenge and a concern, because if I do a price breakup of what we are producing, a good amount of 63 to 68% goes only in wages, because we want to be rightly paying them and see how the pricing can be done. So that's a constant challenge when we are talking to our Gen Z audience, because we also want to bring it down to a level of comfort for them. And that's a challenge which we are unable to break through, but we also can instill a small sense of hope and aspiration in them that the day they get their first salary, they might want to buy a handloom more than the Zara's or H&M. And that for sure has been a reassuring fact with us and people who have associated with us, all the youngsters.
Mr. Menon, the number of challenges that you have overcome and helped people overcome in the last couple of years, I'm sure this is another one that you will find a solution to and help in a sustainable module of income also for them. Referring to a sustainable module, you know, it's popularly now called as the Kerala model of sustainability. You know, people like us who are sitting at home across the country, what can we do? How can we reach out and sort of help these craft clusters across the country in helping them grow and in sort of reaching out to them just in our basic capacity? There are a lot of people, like you said, even on social media, who want to help. You know, there are a lot of people today who want to come out and support, maybe financially, maybe voluntarily, like a couple came from America. What is the need of the hour where people like us can step out and reach out?
It's very simple. I mean, one needs to believe in the produce or in what comes out of our own country. You know, we have been rich in textiles over centuries. I come from a land called Kerala, which had a textile called calico, and that traces back almost back to the 11th century why the Arabs came to Kerala in the first place. So we have historically a greater amount of relevance of craft across the country. You take from one end of the country, from Kanyakumari to Kashmir, or from Gujarat to the Northeast, each part, every 50-100 kilometers of India, the craft system or ecosystem changes constantly, and it's been part of a very sustainable ecosystem, when I call it. You know, there is food, language, and clothing, which keeps changing in this country every few hundred kilometers. And that was a natural preserve which we have destroyed over the decades. But coming back to the point of how you're saying, how does somebody in a city or someone else look at it, is instead of buying 4 shirts in a year, I rather suggest that you buy something which is handmade. When you buy a handmade, it might not make an instant difference to you that you're going to help somebody. The factor that we need to take away from craft is the very basic things that we want to help someone. We want to kind of handhold someone. The craft is so luxurious, or craft is so rich in its features, that we need to take away these words out of it. You know, when you pay the right value to something which is done by hand, automatically that's going to support them. We need to bring weaving or any such craft from the existential spaces that they are into studios. So there are far more aspirational spaces built around them. And that's how, you know, there is a dignity to the labor that the craftsmen do. We don't look at them as artists. So if these small things can be done, you know, you want to buy 4 saris in a year, buy one, which is handmade, pay the right price. It can do the wonders to the craftsmen. Very famously, our prime minister said that if every girl who's going to get married in this country buys a Banarasi sari, the weavers don't have to struggle anywhere. The economy will set it on its own. But that's the story with every craft cluster. If the consumption is turned from occasion and festive and weddings to daily wear, and that's where the challenge lies for designers also, is to make handmade part of the everyday life. And that's as simple as that, what it can sound like.
So let's move towards making handmade, ready-made, readily available for us every day. I think one big takeaway from this conversation for me, amongst many that you've pointed out, is to move the craft clusters from existential spaces into studios. And I think that is an important movement to bring dignity to our weavers, to our artisans. You know, Kerala is known for their backwaters, but what you have done has only moved everything upstream, upward and onward. The effort that you made in the last 3 years to help the handloom, the weavers, to find the right direction, these type of efforts is what makes you special, Mr. Menon. Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast conversation. Thank you so much for taking time out, not only for this conversation, but for the people who you've supported, for the women that you've supported and continue to support. I hope everyone across the country takes inspiration and does something. Let's believe in going local. Let's uplift handloom and let's support the local art. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
I think traveling to the hills is really mentally stimulating for me. The fresh air, long meandering paths, bird songs and cricket chirps are exactly what I need right now. But fate seems to have other plans for now as I wait to get fully vaccinated. Not that I have plans to go loafing around after that, but if you are planning to travel, which is much needed if you've been cooped up at home during the various lockdowns, you know, then just make sure you make a checklist because safety does come first. Firstly, I think you should, you know, go to an isolated place. That's primary. Make sure you eat fresh meals and of course, always, always keep your mask on unless you're eating, of course. And even if you're in a place like Goa and everyone's in the bar, you know, and they seem to have forgotten that COVID is still around, don't join the club because as tempting as that thought is, it is still around. Here's what HT Brunch columnist Veer Sanghvi has to say about traveling during the pandemic.
Should you travel during the pandemic? You know, I find it extraordinary that people even need to ask that question. Of course you should travel. You shouldn't let COVID defeat us. We should try and resume our own lives and our normal lives as much as possible. Besides, I mean, this has been going on since last March. It's bad for your mental health if you don't go out, you don't do normal things. So yes, by all means travel. But if you are going to travel, then there are certain things you must make sure about. First of all, be careful. Be very careful. Always mask up. Always, even if it's not necessarily required, go and get a COVID test. Make sure with a PCR test that you're not infected, that you're not going to infect anybody where you're going. Ideally, you should be vaccinated with 2 doses, but given the mess that our vaccine program is, I can understand if you aren't. But a test is mandatory. When you go there, mask up when you're around people. We live in this misconception that COVID is spread through plates and forks and hotel rooms. It's not. COVID is not spread through contact or anything. COVID is spread through other people. So when you're on holiday, be careful. When you're around other people, strangers particularly, always wear masks. Always maintain as much social distancing as you can. Stay away from crowded places. Don't party. Don't do crazy things like that. Don't go to places where you're not sure what the people are going to be like. If you walk into, say, a restaurant and people are not only unmasked when they're eating, but are generally unmasked and are talking loudly and it's crowded, think twice. Because at the end of the day, your health is more important than anything else. Your mental health is important. Your physical health is important. For your mental health, it makes sense for you to travel. For your physical health, it makes sense for you to be careful. So yes, it's a balance, but it's a balance we should all make because we deserve it.
Moving houses can be a pain. Pandemic or no pandemic, though of course it's much worse right now. And moving cities is a tough task, especially if you're going back home to your parents, which is something that I've been, contemplating to do. And I've moved houses and had half my things sent back home during the pandemic. And this is both during the peak of some wave or the other. And the fact that movers and packers were there insisting and, you know, that they will pack my things was giving me, made me feel really uneasy. Because last year, even the thought of a stranger handling your stuff was scary. So I sat and I packed up half my life. And then I moved houses, but it was thankfully painless because I moved in with a friend. So I don't have to worry about, like, you know, Wi-Fi and electricity and the basics. But I'm not looking forward to house hunting, packing, and the unpacking that I'll have to do in a few months. Wish me luck, guys, for here's what HT Branch columnist Rehana Munir has to say about setting up her new place in Bombay.
Pandemic life can be unnervingly still. We've all discovered the great indoors, as it were, and we've developed very meaningful relationships with the spaces that we live in. So it's been particularly weird to move house at this time. On the face of it, there isn't much to complain about. You have an army of people you can hire to get various jobs done and even have the chai ordered while you're doing all of this. But I'm now 2 weeks into this new living situation and the settling in process just doesn't seem to stop. I'm one of those crazy optimists who always feels the best lies ahead of her. But there's a new challenge to conquer every few hours, it seems. It of course starts with the packing and moving and then with the carpentry and the plumbing. Sofa cleaning, Wi-Fi fixing, washing machine fixing, and the aqua guard, the purifier, all of that. These are all first world problems, but sadly that realization doesn't inure you to a deep sense of displacement that relocation brings in its wake. There are, of course, pleasant discoveries that provide relief between all the drilling and polishing. Where for years I lived in a building that stood on the main road, on a very busy main road, I'm now tucked away, you know, as they say, tucked away in a leafy by lane. I'm in one of those, a sloping lane where the sound of traffic has been replaced by the calm of church bells. What's more, two indie dogs, they guard the building gates. When I say guard, they're just too focused on their meals and rest to care about their guarding duties. And it's now official that absurdity makes it a point to chase me down wherever I live. Case in point, the housing society I find myself in has two A wings, one B wing, and a bungalow that is called the C wing. I mean, it's going to take me some time to figure all of this out. This week's column talks about the many little battles of moving house. I hope it's more fun to read about than to live through. Bye.
She's a Kashmiri musician who switched careers when she realized music was her calling, as it gave meaning to what she was doing in life. Three albums later, Delhi-based award-winning Pragnya Vaklu is getting ready to submit her work for the Grammys. Here's wishing her luck as she sings her original song titled Falling from her latest album Lessons in Love for You. Hope you enjoy it.
Sometimes I wonder.
weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HT Smartcast.